Maplewood Barn Radio Theater is next, sponsored on KBIA by D&H Drug Stores.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of Maplewood Barn Radio Theater, brought to you in conjunction with KBIA. Tonight's tale is based on a short story by Lloyd Osborne and is simply titled Jones, first published in his book Motor Maniacs from 1905. Now we hope you enjoy this audio presentation of Jones by Lloyd Osborne.
Will you marry me?
No.
Well, then as far as I'm concerned, this simply means that I am engaged and you are not.
No, it doesn't work that way, Ezra. You're as free as a bird. You can go away this moment and never write her anything.
Why won't you marry me?
Oh, you know the answer to that, Ezra. I cannot marry before Eleanor. She is my older sister and I am honor bound.
Freddie, you have to admit this is an exasperating situation. Here you stand in front of me, an exquisite, blooming 20-year-old American girl who is sending away the man she cares for because her older sister is not married.
Yes, and it is a mystery. Eleanor is cultured, nice, and college-bred, while I am the adopted child in the family.
Of course, but Eleanor's long suit is not her looks. She is tall and bony, which makes her, well, a bit jagged at the edges.
I am sorry, Ezra, but I shall never, never marry before Eleanor. It would wound her. I know it would. And make her feel that she has failed. I don't see why being an old maid is always supposed to be funny, do you? It's touching and tragic in a woman who'd like to marry and who isn't asked.
But Eleanor must have had heaps of offers, surely.
Just one.
Well, one something. Why didn't she take him up on it?
She told me just the other day that she is sorry she didn't. But that was 3 years ago.
Well, I've loved you for four, Freddie. Listen, there is a ray of hope here. Tell me his name, where he lives, and all.
We were coming back from Colorado, and there was some mistake about our tickets. They sold our Pullman drawing room twice over, to a Dr. Jones and his mother, and also to ourselves. You never saw such a fight. And that led to our becoming friends, and his proposing to Eleanor.
Then why in heaven's name didn't she jump all over him?
She said she couldn't marry a man who was her intellectual inferior.
And was he?
Oh, he was a perfect idiot. But nice and all that, and tremendously in love with her.
We should look him up this instant. Chase him to the ends of the earth if necessary. Where did you say he lived?
His mother told me he was going to New York to practice medicine.
Was that the end of it?
Yes.
What was his first name?
Wait a moment. Let me think. Yes, it was Harry.
Just Harry Jones, then. New York City?
Yes.
Well, that gives us something to go on. But are you sure that Eleanor would marry him?
I'm not sure.
Tell me exactly what she said about not accepting the doctor's proposal.
She said she was almost sorry she hadn't accepted that silly doctor.
That doesn't sound like much, does it?
Oh, from Eleanor it does. She said it quite seriously, Ezra, as you know how she hides her feelings using sarcasm.
Well, then the Van Cort family is very difficult to marry into.
But being an orphan...
Well, I'm going to find that Jones if I have
to... Ezra, dear boy, don't get crazy. How could you think for a moment that...
I'm off to New York, my love. Goodbye.
Wait a second, Ezra. I want to give you this.
Ew. What is that?
It's the hind leg of a jackrabbit. A rabbit's foot. Shot by a grave at the full of the moon. It's supposed to be lucky. It was given to me by a naval officer who got drowned. It's the only way I can help you.
And thus equipped, Ezra set out bravely for New York. Upon his arrival, he began his research with the phone book and found 87 Dr. Henry Joneses, excluding 17 dentists and 12 veterinarians. On the 23rd candidate he examined, Ezra went in with a complaint of
insomnia. I can't sleep.
I see. Please take off your clothes.
After stripping, he was beaten, poked, and prodded. Ezra waited for a break in the torture and then casually remarked,
Ah, this reminds me of Colorado. A wonderful state, Colorado.
To me, it's the land of memories. Sad, beautiful, irrevocable memories.
Some very dear friends of mine were once in Colorado. Morristown people. The Van Courts.
The Van Courts? Do you mean to say that you know Eleanor Van Cort?
All my life. Why, they were talking about you only yesterday. That is, if it was you. A Pullman drawing room.
And a mistake about the tickets. Yes, that's them, all right. Talking about me, did you say? Did Eleanor, I mean, did Miss Van Court express...
She was wondering how she could find you. They're putting together a house party, and she was running over her guest list. If only I knew where that dear Dr. Jones was, she said, and then asked me if there was any way...
So she has remained unmarried. Unmarried after all these years.
She's a very popular girl. She's had dozens of men at her feet, but some unfortunate encounter keeps her from seeing other men.
Eleanor, I hope I'm not presuming on very short acquaintance, but the fact is, why should I not tell you? Miss Van Court was the woman in my life.
And her sister, Frederica, or Freddy as I call her, is the woman in my life.
Oh, this is grand, just grand. Now we must cure your insomnia.
Oh, that's nothing. Really nothing.
No, no, my friend. I owe you an eternal debt of gratitude, and it can only be repaid if we achieve a full cure of your ailment. First, we will tie you down and shoot you with the X-ray machine. We will take a pint of blood for testing. Here, let me pull out some hair to test your nerve endings.
Ooh-wee! Stop that!
Ezra escaped soon after, sustaining no discernible permanent damage. He was justifiably proud of his determination and dashed off a telegram to Freddy. She replied promptly, telling Ezra to engage Dr. Jones for a 3-day house party at Morristown and send a message as soon as he could, letting her know when they could come. A few days later, Ezra once again descended on Dr. Jones' office.
I have great news. Eleanor's aunt, Mrs. Matthewman, is having a 3-day house party and we're invited. They were hoping that you might have a date free in the near future.
I can't go.
Oh, but you have to.
Mr. Westerby, I was foolish enough to back a friend's store here with my credit. He has skipped to Minnesota, and I am left with $304.75 to pay. To take a 3-day holiday would be a serious matter to me at any time, but at this moment it is impossible. I can't go.
You may never have another opportunity. Eleanor is doing something that I would have never expected from someone as proud and reserved as her. The advances of such a woman
If it wasn't for my mother, I'd throw everything to the winds and fly to her. But I have a mother, a sainted mother, Mr. Westerby. Her welfare must always be my primary concern.
Is there no chance of anything turning up? An appendicitis case? An outbreak of measles? I thought there was a lot of scarlatina going around right now.
No, no, it will not do.
Doctor, I'm pretty well fixed myself. I'm blessed with an income that runs into 5 figures. And if all goes the way it should, we will be brothers-in-law in 6 months. We're almost relations. Give me the privilege of taking over this small obligation.
But my dignity, my self-respect, my... I cannot do it, and for God's sake, don't ask me to.
But you must think of Eleanor, so deeply hurt, so mortified, that in her recklessness, she would probably throw herself onto the first man passing by. This is your chance. The one chance of your life, you are letting a piece of idiotic pride wreck the potential happiness of a lifetime.
Yes, yes, I agree.
He agreed with moans and weeps. He had the candor of a child and the torrential sentiment of a German musician. $304.75 stood between him and eternal bliss, and yet he waved Ezra's pocketbook aside. And all the while, Ezra felt he was losing Freddy. Back at the club, Ezra gathered his friends and asked them,
"Are any of you sick?"
"Sick? What do you mean?"
"Unwell, ill, perhaps some disease, or at least some minor psoriasis or something of that nature. Anything."
"Well, no. I'm feeling fine. Why do you ask?"
"There is a young doctor who has debts, and I am trying to help him get more business. Come on. Someone here must have some illness. I'll cover all the bills. Don't let money stand in your way."
"Well, I'm not willing to turn myself over to a young pup doctor, but I do have an anemic serving girl."
"Every little bit counts."
"And I have a groom with varicose veins that I will throw in for good measure."
"Thank you. This is exceedingly generous."
"Say, here's an idea. If you're willing to buy medical services for people, you should go see Bishop Jordan. He is in touch with more sick people than anyone I know. He can probably help you drum up some business for the young doctor, as long as you are footing the bill.
So Ezra set out to see Bishop Jordan. Along the way, he gave money to several people who looked unwell, telling them to go see Dr. Jones. When he arrived at the monastery, Ezra addressed the bishop.
Bishop, I've come to make a trade with you.
A trade?
Here's a check for $1,000 drawn to your order. And here's the address of Dr. Henry Jones, 1892 80th Avenue. I want this money to reach him via your sick people and without my name being involved.
May I ask the meaning of so peculiar a request?
He's hard up, and I want to help him. You have sick people, I have a doctor. Sounds like a fit. The only thing is, I want the money distributed quickly. No waiting around for more worthy cases or any of that nonsense. I want the doctor to put that money in the bank as quickly as possible.
Would you consider 2 weeks?
Oh, no more than one, please.
It is understood, of course, that this young man then is a duly certified and capable physician?
Oh, I can answer for his being all right, Bishop. He's thoroughly up to date, you know. Shoots you with the x-rays, uses electrocution, and keeps up pace with modern science.
You say you can answer for him. Might I inquire who you are?
I am Westerby, Ezra Westerby, managing partner of Hodge and Westerby, boxers.
I like boxers.
Not like the underwear or anything like that. Just regular old boxes for shipping items.
And I like $1,000 checks, too. When you have any more to spare, just give them a fair wind in this direction.
Ezra left the Episcopal Church feeling good about himself. Once again, he was going to beat the odds. He gave Dr. Jones a few days to cope with the rise in business and then ventured over for a visit. When he arrived, the anteroom was full, and there was a queue down the street.
My, it looks like business is booming.
The Lord only knows what's happened to my practice. The blame thing has gone up like a rocket. It seems to me there must be a great wave of sickness passing through New York just now.
Everybody's complaining. But say, how about if we go down to the Van Courts from Saturday to Tuesday? They haven't given up hope of seeing you there, Doctor, and the thing's still open.
No, I told you it was about the money, and it was before. But, my dear Westerby, after giving the subject a great deal of consideration, I have come to the conclusion that it would be too painful for me to revive those unhappy emotions.
I thought you loved her.
That's why I've determined not to go. I have outlived one refusal. How do I know I have the strength, the determination, the hardihood to undergo the agonies of another?
Remember, the faint of heart never win a fair lady.
She's the star above me, and I am crushed by my own presumption. Is there any such fool as the man that breaks his heart twice for the impossible?
But it isn't impossible. Hasn't she, as far as a woman can, hasn't she called you back to her? What more do you expect her to do? A woman's delicacy forbids her from screaming for a man, and I think Eleanor has already gone a tremendous way in just hinting
that... You may be right, but then you may also be wrong. The risk is too terrible for me to run. It will comfort me all my life to think that perhaps she does love me in secret.
Do you mean to say that you're going to give it all up?
There's no need to get angry about it. After all, I have some justification in thinking she doesn't care.
What on earth do you suppose she invited you for, then?
Well, it would be different if I had a note from her. A flower. Some little tender reminder of those old days in the Pullman.
She's saving all that up for the house party.
You seem to make the matter a very personal one.
Well, I love Freddie. Our cases are intertwined. And I am so positive that you love Eleanor and that Eleanor loves you. Put yourself in my place, Doctor, that you two should get together.
You know, I really do love Eleanor, but I don't deserve her. It's all so confusing. Look, patients are waiting. I will think about it. That's the best I can do right now.
It was not the answer Ezra was looking for. He immediately found a phone and called Freddie and quickly explained the situation to her, ending with,
"You must get Eleanor to telegraph him directly."
Well, she would never do that.
Can't you persuade her?
She won't do it. It's impossible.
Then he won't budge a single inch.
Ezra, suppose I just sign the telegram, Van Court?
That's it. That's exactly how to do it.
If he misunderstood it, I mean if he thought it really came from Eleanor, there couldn't be any fuss about it afterwards, could there?
And of course, you'll send the official invitation from Mrs. Mathewson besides?
Oh, yes, of course. Whoops, have to hang up. Auntie's coming.
Can't I even say I love you?
Freddie had already hung up, but the talk brightened Ezra's whole day. On Saturday, they arrived at the Mathewman estate for the house party, and everything went along quite well for the first few days. The first night, there was a formal dinner, and everyone looked their best. Jones followed Eleanor around like a dog, and she could scarcely move without stepping on him. On Sunday, one of the housemaids drank some wood alcohol by mistake, and Jones dominated the situation. And for the rest of the day, it was all Jones, 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 and the tramps of modern medicine. That evening, though, Ezra found Jones lolling and moaning on a sofa at the dark end of the room.
What's the matter, Jones? It isn't possible that she's refused you?
My mother.
Well, what about your mother?
Was to be, I had been such a fool. You see, my mother would never consent to my marrying Eleanor. I'm in the position of having to choose between my mother and the woman I love. And I owe so much to my mother, Westerby. She put me through college. She hardly had enough to eat. She...
I can't think that of your mother. A mother like yours, Jones, would consent to stand between you and your lifelong happiness.
Well, there's Bertha.
Great Scott. And who is Bertha?
The girl my mother chose for me 2 years ago. Bertha McNutt, you know. If I must marry, it's Bertha. Bertha or nothing.
It's too late to say that now, old fellow.
It's not too late for me to go home this very night.
Well, Jones, I can't think you'd do such a caddish thing as that. Think it over for a minute. You come down here, you sweep that unfortunate girl off her feet, you make love to her with the fury of a stage villain, you force her to betray her feelings for you, and then you have the gall to say, goodbye, I'm off.
My mother.
Then why did you ever come?
That's just the question I'm asking myself now.
I don't see that you have any right to assume so much about your mother. Eleanor Van Court is a woman of unimpeachable social position, has a little fortune of her own, is accomplished, handsome, charming, sought after. Why, if you managed to win such a girl, your mother would be very proud.
No, she wouldn't. Bertha, you...
But good heavens, man, love is love. And you owe some courtesy to our hostess. If you went away tonight, it would be an insult. Whatever you decide to do later, you've got to stay here till Tuesday morning.
Must I?
A gentleman would.
All right, then. Can I borrow a white tie?
It was a glum evening all round. The next morning, Ezra was up early, telling the butler he had business to tend to, but would be back by lunchtime. He went directly to see Mrs. Jones and told her the entire story.
Surely you won't let Harry ruin his life from a mistaken sense of duty to you?
Duty, fiddlesticks. He's going to marry Bertha McNutt.
But he doesn't want to marry Bertha McNutt.
Then he won't marry anybody. This arrangement has been understood between Mrs. McNutt and myself for years.
Then I appeal to your sense of love, of romance.
Romance means nothing to me. You seem like a very nice young man, but young Harry will be wed to Bertha McNutt or nobody. Oh, it is Mrs. McNutt. Hello.
Well, what do you think?
About what?
Bertha. My Bertha. Oh, isn't it wonderful? She's been secretly married to Mr. Stuffenhammer for the last 3 months.
Married to?
Oh, how fortunate it all was. $20,000 a year and her own carriage. You could have knocked me down with a feather. Bertha is such a considerate child. She insisted on marrying secretly so she could let poor Harry down one step at a time. She could not help feeling that she owed it to the dear boy to graduate.
Oh, you shouldn't pity Harry. I just got the good news that he's engaged to one of the sweetest and richest girls in Morristown.
That was all Ezra needed to hear. He jumped for his hat and coat and hurried back to tell Jones the news, who was electrified by the announcement. Then he began asking Ezra agitated questions about how to propose.
Why, you defer to me as though I've spent all my free time proposing to young ladies.
But I need to be coached in how to do it, you know.
Just rip out the words, any old words, and then kiss her. Just blurt it out, no matter how badly, but with all the fire you can muster.
But that seems so informal. It doesn't sound to me as respectful.
You try it. It's the only way.
I'll be glad when it's over. All right, here goes.
And Joan started on a trembling walk toward the house. The afternoon was permeated with a state of restless agitation as everyone waited for the joyous moment. But it didn't come. Finally, in his frustration, Ezra decided to get some fresh air. He was reflecting on the state of affairs when he heard footsteps. It was Jones himself, and he was leaving.
Jones! Jones! Stop! Where are you going?
Home.
But you can't do that. It's rude. We don't break up till tomorrow.
I'm breaking up now.
But you...
Let go of my arm.
But my dear fellow, we...
Don't you dear fellow me. Look, Westerby, if there's one thing I'm sensitive about, it is my name. We aren't a common Jones family. We're the Connecticut Joneses, and very proud of it. The name is dear to me. Sacred. And yet, do you know what she said to me, holding my hand? That the only thing she didn't like about me was my name.
Good heavens.
I told her that Van Cort didn't strike me as being anything special.
Wouldn't it have been wiser to ask?
Oh, for myself, I'd do anything in the world for her. But a fellow has to show a little pride. A fellow owes something to his family, doesn't he?
And are you telling me that because of one unfortunate remark, a remark that anyone might make in the heat of the moment, you're deliberately turning your back on her?
Oh, she's angry, too, over what I said about the Van Courts.
She couldn't have realized that you belonged to the Connecticut Joneses. I didn't know it.
Well, it's all off now.
It was a mile to the depot. For Jones, it was a mile of reproaches, scoldings, lectures, and insults. For Ezra, it was a mile of pleading, arguing, extenuating, and explaining. But Jones would hear nothing of it, and he left Ezra standing at the depot with his hopes dashed. When Ezra returned, he was lucky enough to find Eleanor crying softly to herself. The sight of her tears revived his flagging courage.
Eleanor, I've just seen poor Jones off at the depot.
I don't care.
No, you can't care very much, or you wouldn't send a man like that. A splendid fellow, a member of one of the oldest and proudest families of Connecticut, to his death.
Death?
He's decided to enlist. He's off to Japan tomorrow. They're going through 50 doctors a week out there at the front. They're shot down faster than they can bring them up. Oh, Eleanor, can't you do anything?
I'm helpless, Ezra. My woman's pride.
Oh, how can you let such trifles stand between you? Think of him out there in his tattered Japanese uniform, so far from home, so lonely, so heartbroken, standing undaunted in that rain of steel while...
Oh, Ezra, stop! I can't bear it! I can't bear it!
Is the love of 3 years to be thrown aside like an old glove? Just because you...
Oh, Ezra, I would follow him barefoot through the snow if only he would...
He's leaving tomorrow at 10:45.
Here is my diamond locket. Take it to him at once and say I sent it. Say that I beg him to return. That my pride crumbles at the thought of him going into danger.
Oh, and Eleanor, try not to rub him the wrong way about his name. There have to be Joneses, you know.
Oh, tell him I never meant to wound him. Truly, I didn't. A name that's good enough for him is good enough for me.
The next morning at 9, Ezra pulled up before Jones's door. Jones gave him a pale, expressionless stare. Resignation, obstinacy, and defiance, all nicely blended under a turn-the-other-cheek exterior.
Good morning, Jones. What a nice day it is.
Mr. Westerby, I had hoped to never see you again.
Oh, bosh.
You have a very tough epidermis.
What treatment would you recommend?
Fresh air. Please leave.
Look, my dear fellow, she has sent you this. Her diamond locket. Eleanor asked me to deliver it and to beg you to return. Well, speak up, man. I have a cab waiting.
Her locket? Yes, let me fly to her.
They tumbled into the cab with Jones clenching the locket in his hand. But Ezra still had to coach him about that Japanese war business, or there might be trouble. So Ezra leaned over the back seat and gently broke it to him. The response from Jones was immediate.
Let me out.
But I didn't know what else to tell her. Something had to be done. You must make allowances. It was the first thing that popped into my head. You have to admit that it worked. Didn't she send you the locket? Didn't she send...
You've made me look like a prancing show-off fool. A nice figure I'd cut, traipsing around the battlefields in a kimono and looking for a kindly bullet to lay me low. If I were ever tempted by such a thing, which God forbid, wouldn't I prefer to spread diseased expectorate on buttered toast?
I never thought of that.
I have known retail liars, but I guess you are the only wholesaler in the business.
All right, Jones. Then I'll play my last card. When all else fails, tell the truth. You see, I love Freddie, but she is determined not to marry before her older sister, and Eleanor is in love with you, so it rests with you to give me Freddie or take her from me.
Westoby, when they have another World's Fair, you must get a building to yourself. You're colossal, that's what you are.
I'm only in love.
Well, that's the love that moves mountains. If anybody had told me that I would have to stand for all that rot about Japan...
They ran into Freddie and Eleanor at the lodge gates. Jones went straight to Eleanor, while Ezra stepped to the side with Freddie. It was now or never, so Freddie and Ezra simply held their breath and waited. Finally, Jones and Eleanor turned, still talking softly, walking slowly and deliberately. It was impossible to tell whether things had gone right or not. Ezra waited for him to speak. He bent toward Ezra, quite confidentially, and said,
"Say, is there any place around here where a fellow can buy an engagement ring?"
And on that happy note, the happy couples linked arms and strolled off into their future lives together. We hope this story will serve as a lesson to all spineless wimps who wish to become engaged. Find a determined friend to push you over the cliff of love. We hope you have enjoyed this audio presentation of Jones by Lloyd Osborne. Our players were Carrie Butters as Ezra, Joe Bogue as Jones, Rita Maloney as Freddie and Mrs. Jones, Byron Scott as the friend at the club and the bishop, and Molly Dodge as Mrs. McNutt and Eleanor. The show was adapted for radio by Brad Buchanan, and our engineer was Darren Helwich. This is your narrator, Brad Buchanan, hoping you will join us again next week for another edition of Maplewood Barn Radio Theater, right here on KBIA.
Maplewood Barn Radio Theater is sponsored on KBIA by D&H Drug Stores.